Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Dane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. This week, Dane is pleased to welcome Scott Warren, co-founder of the Leadership Transition Community and a fellow at the SNF Agora Institute at Johns Hopkins. Scott brings his unique insights from his previous leadership role in civic education to his current focus on the nuances of leadership transitions, emphasizing their potential to drive both personal and organizational advancement. In today's episode, listeners will discover, first, opportunities in leadership transitions. Explore how leadership transitions are not just challenges, but opportunities for growth, offering pivotal moments that can redefine personal and organizational trajectories. Second, strategic planning's role in transitions. Understand the critical role of strategic planning in managing leadership transitions effectively, ensuring that new leaders are prepared and that organizations are positioned for success. Finally, navigating the challenges of leadership transitions. Delve into the common challenges that leaders face during transitions. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name's Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group, and today I'm joined by Scott Warren. Scott is a former co-founder and CEO of The Generation Citizen, and also co-founder of Leadership Transition Community, as well as serving as a fellow at SNF, Agora Institute at Johns Hopkins. So he's a busy guy, and I'm excited to dive into this whole topic of teams and leadership transition and all that goes with that today. So thanks for joining, Scott.
Excited to be here, Dane, and excited for the conversation.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about how you came to be doing all of this great work.
Yeah. So I co-founded, as you said, I co-founded and led an organization called Generation Citizen for a little bit more than a decade. So it's a US-based organization that's focused on transforming civics education, getting it back into US schools, making it action-oriented and relevant, because civics is not really something we teach in the US. And when it's taught, it's, you know, sort of boring and rote, and here are the three branches of government, here's how Bible comes to law. So I ran that organization for, you know, more than a decade. We expanded throughout the US. We had about six different offices, about 50 different staff members. I enjoyed the work. I found it meaningful. But I, you know, at a certain point, decided that it was time to transition from the CEO role. And there's a few different reasons that I made that decision. You know, one, honestly, I was tired. I had been doing it for more than a decade. You know, so it was a lot of managing team members. It was a lot of fundraising. And another reason is that I wanted to explore different things. Democracy has always been something I cared about. Civics education was one component, but I wanted to expand beyond that. And the third is I wanted to make sure that the organization was sustainable beyond me and had leadership that was more proximate to the population that we focused on than I was, especially as I became older. So I started going through this transition journey. You know, again, we had about a 50-person team, about a $6 million budget, and realized that there weren't that many resources out there for leaders that were going through transition process. And so I had to learn a lot of it on my own. I had to talk to others who told me to talk to others who told me to talk to others. I had to find books. And we put a plan together. We had a perfect plan. The board was leading the process. We can go more into that. We used an external search firm. I was going to be out by June of 2020, take a few months off, go backpack, travel the world. COVID hit. I ended up extending my stay for six more months. We had to let go of 20% of our team. And the transition ended up going great. We hired a new CEO that 3.5 years later is still in seat. But I realized at the end of that, we don't provide resources to leaders that are going through this process, and transitions are sort of seen as this necessary evil rather than this opportunity for individual and organizational transformation and growth. And so I, th- through that, I've been doing a number of things at the Gore Institute at Johns Hopkins related to democracy, but I've got really interested in this notion of leadership transition and how it can be seen as this powerful opportunity rather than, as I said, this necessary evil. And so I've worked with leaders across the world that are going through their own transitions. I've had the opportunity to partner with a woman named Krista Gannon, who was having similar realizations to me after running an organization called Fresh Lifeline for youth out in the Bay Area. And so we've put cohorts of leaders together. We've amalgamated some promising practices as it pertains to leadership transition. But at the crux of this is just a realization that there is a need and sort of market failure in terms of working with leaders that are transitioning. But again, I think for organizations and companies to really be sustainable, leaders to be able to figure out their next journey, we have to figure out how to have real conversations about what transitions mean. And so that's sort of how I got in this work.
It's fascinating and it's fantastic. I love the framing of turning the leadership transition into an opportunity to transform. You sound like you saw that multifaceted. So there was individual transformation as well as organizational transformation at the same time?
Yeah, I think so. On the individual front, one thing that I thought about a lot was my identity, and I founded my organization young. My identity was very much tied to the organization. So I was sort of like this civics education guy, right? And there was a part of that that was great. I developed expertise and there was a part of it. And I feel like a lot of founders and leaders have this where like I was curious and interested in different things and I didn't just want to be the civics education guy. At the same time, there is this sort of harrowing step of, well, okay, if I you know, actually move beyond this organization, are people actually going to see me of having value beyond the work that I've done at one organization? So that's one part of it. And it's challenging because there's a certain comfort in running an organization where you've been for a while. And then organizationally, I just really do believe that, and I think it's easier to say this than to live this for what it's worth, but that there's value to new leadership with new eyes coming in to look at problems that and challenges and opportunities that organizations face. And that's where I think the opportunity comes. I think I probably could have led the organization for, you know, years on end. I probably honestly didn't have the same fire that I did, which took some, you know, took some work to recognize. And I think that, you know, I sort of saw problems the same way. And that's where I think the transitions for opportunity framework can come in, where it's a little bit, can someone come in and see, you know, the same problems that we've had year after year and maybe have different solutions to figuring them out?
Yeah, no, that makes sense in a lot of ways. And I've personally, I think, experienced a few of those feelings and emotions too. It's kind of like, it's your biggest love and passion, and it's also a bit of a ball and chain at times too.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, a lot of times when you found an organization, people refer to it as your baby. And I've struggled with that a little bit because there's a part of me, I don't have kids yet, but there's a part of me that understands that to the extent of, okay, it's something that's part of you. And it's something that you helped birth. And it's something that will always have part of your identity. But I also think that there's utility to it, like expanding beyond you and not being as much part of your identity. I feel like it's difficult for people to make that separation and to have that awareness, I guess, to a certain extent. And I am, for what it's worth, something that I've been interested in, which is there a distinction between leadership and transitions in the corporate sector versus the social sector? And I actually don't know, but I think sometimes in the corporate sector, there's a little bit more of a having a leader for a long time is seen as a sense of stability. Where in the social sector, sometimes because of the cause, transitions can be seen a little bit more as a healthy endeavor. So I don't know. That's something that I've been playing around with a little bit as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because you see, you know, I think some of the data I read a number of years ago was the average CEO sitting at about 4.6 years in a private sector role.
It was that short.
Yeah, but that may have changed since COVID. That was a pre-COVID stat. I haven't looked at it since then. And that's average. And
yeah,
I don't know the sample size, but I agree with you. You'll see there'll be big organizations where you see a CEO in place for a long time. But then you do see a lot of lower to middle market organizations changing CEOs every, you know, 2 to 3 years, having a few misfires. So it's different everywhere, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess that's also, there probably is some sort of sweet spot, and we'd love to do more research on where, like, when we talk about transitions for transformation, especially at the leadership level, it's probably not the greatest thing in the world, like, to do a 2 to 3 year transition because you haven't been there enough time to have an impact. It's probably not the greatest thing in the world to have someone in seat like 20, 30 years because there's a sense of stagnation that comes with it too. So I don't know. I mean, one of the things that we've actually really shied away from in the work that we've done is to refer to anything as a best practice because I just don't think there's a right way of doing it. There's just more of an intentional way of doing it. But I'm sure you could look at some stats to see, I mean, on the for-profit end, what's the sweet spot in terms of returns and financial returns, and the social sector, probably something in terms of, you know, mission completement and alignment to some extent too.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And in your research or work, you mentioned you're bringing some cohorts together, which I'd love to dive into in a minute. Is it always the top leader, or sometimes will you take a leader of a local chapter or a leader of a function in a larger organization?
So it's a great question. We've only worked with top leaders. I actually think that there is huge utility to working with COOs, directors of sites, you know, chief program officers. We just haven't done that, but I think that that's a big component of it as well. I also think, for what it's worth, there's huge utility to working with successors for folks that come in after leaders. Especially founders, because I have not been one of those people, but I gather there's a whole set of challenges that emerge from that. I don't think Chris and I are founders, and so we wouldn't be the best people to lead that. But I've talked to a number of folks that come in after and just think that would be, you know, that would be really interesting to provide support and to learn from as well.
Yeah, it would. And when you look generationally right now, particularly in the private sector, there are a lot of family-owned businesses with boomer leaders who are going to transition. And so there's going to be a lot of successes coming into a lot of businesses that maybe weren't family members. There's going to be an interesting data set out there in the next 5 to 10 years.
I mean, that's something I'd love to do research on too, is it seems anecdotally that there's more transitions happening across the board. For a whole host of reasons. I think post-COVID, you really saw that, just a sense of exhaustion from leading. And I think more of a desire to control your own schedule and to control your own life. But I don't know how much that's backed up by stats. Ben, it's interesting to think about where you have family-owned offices like that. But that's something where we've seen, especially in the social sector space, this was not something that a lot of folks were thinking about. Now I think there's a lot of foundations, organizations that are realizing, oh, we really need to think about transitions as a guideway to both organizational health and individual fulfillment.
Yeah. And in that social space, Scott, I know you spend a little bit of time up at Stanford. I saw Stanford put out a collective impact study. I don't know if you're familiar with that paper. And it sort of talked about when you're trying to make social change that you kind of need this spine, this kind of central governing or organizing concept of which all the other little organizations kind of feed off and build around. Do you see with leadership transitions in that social space that people are moving from one to another and continuing to connect? Maybe causes, foundations, donors, corporate partners, or how does that look?
I mean, I don't know if I can speak to that, the realities of how that's happening. I can speak to my own experience, which is one of the things that happened after I transitioned, which I think goes to this collective impact notion, is more of a recognition that the work that I was doing and the Generation Citizen was doing was really important, but not everything and part of a much larger ecosystem. And I think I conceptually realized that when I was leading the organization, or intellectually realized that, but I understood that much better when I was on the outside. When you're sort of on the inside, you're consumed by everything that you're doing without necessarily recognizing how it fits into, you know, the broader ecosystem. So something I've tried to spend a lot more time doing is that sort of system leadership, collective leadership approach. It's something that I think, again, especially in the social sector, I would hope that there's more desire to think about mergers, to think about different ways of actually doing work. I've spent a lot of time trying to de-silo efforts since I transitioned, because what happens, and this is where I do think there's probably a difference between a for-profit organization that's trying to correct market failure, for lack of a better way of saying it, and a social sector organization that's trying to make a difference. A lot of times you're forced to say, here's how my organization is gonna save democracy, gonna save climate, and that's BS. Like, no organization can do that on its own. But I think it took a transition for me to realize how much that was the case and how much that was true. And so the hope is that as people transition, they realize, oh, you know, the work that we were doing was really important, but it wasn't everything, in a way that hawking your work so much forces you to believe. Not to be too cynical about it, but that's something
no, I hear.
Sort of thought about it in retrospect.
Yeah. The coach that I work with, that actually strikes a chord for me. The coach that I'm working with now is constantly trying to coach me into a heightened level of awareness, because as a leader, it's easy to get really focused on what has to happen today. Yeah. And if you can be more aware, if you can extend and have more outside influence, that might give you recognition of a pattern that exists somewhere else that you could follow, or, you know, a movement that you could, you know, use as a tailwind. And those things are real.
Totally. I mean, that level of awareness, I think it's a little, I look back on when I was leading Generation Citizen, and I feel like every day, especially at the end when I was getting burned out, but every day I was stressed about something, and something was happening with a team member that would, you know, just be the most existential moment of the day, of the month, of the year. And I look back and I literally can't remember what those things were. Because there were a few things that really did matter, but 95% of things didn't. But it's really hard to recognize that in the moment. And maybe that's fine. I mean, maybe that's part of leadership. But I do think that, I mean, I think some of what your coach is saying of, you know, if you can have that awareness of, okay, this matters, this next week is probably not going to matter as much. But I think after transitioning, you recognize a little bit more of, okay, how much of this is sort of BS and how much of this is actually stuff to pay attention to.
Yeah. And that's where cohorts come in as helpful. So I'm intrigued with your cohorts that you mentioned earlier. Are you bringing in leaders who are planning to transition or leaders who have transitioned? Where are you bringing these groups together?
So we call leaders exit curious. So it's all folks that are curious about transitioning out of their roles at some point. It could be in 6 months, it could be in 2 years, it could be more than that, but they know that they want to transition at some point in the future. And I think what's really helpful about the cohorts is that transitioning out of a leadership role is a pretty lonely endeavor, because what you're doing is you're having to straddle a lot of different identities and roles at the same time. You're having to figure out, all right, how do I transition in a way that is healthy for the organization? So you're thinking about the organizational piece of it. You're also having to run the organization. It's not like you can stop running the organization while you're transitioning. You're also starting to think about what's next for you personally. Those are three really big things, right? And this isn't to diminish, you know, someone else, but a lot of other people, if you're at, you know, an organization, and you're interviewing in another role, you get that other role, you give 2 weeks, 1 month, 6 weeks, if you're nice, notice, and you put an offboarding plan together, and that's that. Again, not to diminish that, but when you're in a leadership role, you do have to do all three of those things at the same time. It would be irresponsible to just take another role and leave. So you do have to run the organization, but a lot of times you're leading that transition process and you are figuring out what's right for yourself. So I think the cohorts are really helpful for folks to be able to navigate that lonely process with other folks that are going through it. And so we provide a framework, we provide coaching, but having that community of folks, that exit curious, you know, sort of folks is something that I think is really helpful.
Yeah. So you get, let's say you get 6 or 8 people together. Is that virtually? Do you bring them into a room? How does that play out?
So we'd really love to bring them in person. I've done a lot of convening with folks in person in the last few years. And I think especially post-COVID, there's such value to bringing folks together. We have not through this work. So it's something we'd love to do. But what we actually do is we have 6 monthly sessions. So they're all 2 hour sessions. And we focus on 3 different components. So one is the strategy behind transitions. So what does it actually look like for the organization? How are you thinking about what the organization could look like on the other end? How this transition is part of something broader. The second is tactical. And so that's literally, what's my communications plan? How am I communicating to my team? How am I communicating to stakeholders? How are we figuring out who's going to succeed me? What's the board's role if you're a nonprofit? What's the team's role? And the third role is that emotional piece. And so how do I decouple my identity? How do I start to think about what's next? And that's something, you know, that I think oftentimes leaders can neglect because you're so focused on actually executing. And so we meet on a monthly basis and there's, you know, some individual work product, there's conversations, we go through some of what we learn. And I think it's you know, worked relatively well so far. Folks seem to appreciate it. Again, you know, I think that it's not something that, that this space has prioritized enough what transitions look like. So I think that we've been able to fill that up to some extent.
I like that. And I like getting ahead of it in a big way and as a group, because it's like you said, it's a very lonely place. And if you can get ahead of it as a group, you've got to think, not only is it good for you as a transitioning leader, but going back to your point on health of the organization, like burnt out leaders do a lot of damage to their teams. So you're almost like keeping someone from the fire before they're out, right? I would imagine.
Yeah. I mean, I think back on my own transition and this is something we go over with folks, but I had a lot of just up and downs, right? Going through the cycle. Where there were some days where I was really excited about my next steps and what was next for the organization. And there are some days where I, you know, would be in a phone booth sobbing because I was so stressed out and didn't know how I would actually move forward and was in this purgatory of, well, I know I'm leaving, but I don't know who to tell I'm leaving, or I've told the team I'm leaving, therefore I'm a lame duck and I don't even know how much they're listening to me. And so, you know, having a group of folks that you can guide, I wish that I had had that. I think part of what we've done is put together something that, you know, other folks would want. It's a hard process and that's the whole, there's not a blueprint for this, but I do think it's something that needs to be destigmatized. I think that there is this sort of cone of silence that leaders deal with transitions, which is like, well, we're going to, you know, like leaders will be very transparent about everything except their transition process, for example.
Yeah.
And so, you know, how can you sort of make this something that you're talking about with stakeholders and team members and funders and investors more on the regular because it is seen as a natural thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Talking about stigma, that lame duck term that you just shared, that's a real fear for a lot of people, but I'd like to kind of peel back a little bit on that one because my personal opinion right now, given that we're seeing so much burnout, disconnection, loneliness across all layers of any organization, is that maybe people are actually excited to see someone standing up and saying, I've decided it's time to call the change and maybe they're going to learn from that person's change. I don't know. What was it behind your use of that words that kind of comes from your experience or from what you're seeing out there, Scott?
It's really interesting. And I hadn't thought about sort of that loneliness part of this and the connection or the lack of connection. You know, when I was articulating the reasons for my transition to my team, I had to be, or I wanted to be, quite careful about the balance between being authentic, which I tried to lead very authentically, including the fact that I was very tired, with not wanting to demotivate my team.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, something that was tricky, but in retrospect, I did get feedback from folks that they appreciated my candor, right? And I think that this is something, as it comes to transitions, again, I want to make sure that this isn't seen as a best practice. But sometimes you see folks or announcements that are, everything's great with the organization and I'm really excited to move on and this couldn't come at a better time. And, yeah. Everything's coming up roses. And it's just like people can see through that,
it's
right?
Fake.
Yeah. And so I actually, I put something out both to my team and publicly where I was like, I founded this organization as a young person and I haven't been able to live life like I want to leading this organization. It's been too all consuming to me. And I was careful because I said, I don't think that everybody will have the same experience leading the organization. I think it's possible to run an organization, have a family. But I said, for me, it might not be.
Yeah.
And I left the organization and now I'm married and planning a family. I'm not saying that those are totally related, but I think that it's actually somewhat related. And
yeah.
I think that that's probably something that folks don't, talk about enough is that toll. And so I tried to be candid with my team without scaring them off, if that makes sense. So it's a delicate balance,
yeah.
But to your point, it is fake to sort of say, like, this is awesome. But I also think that there's potential for transformation. So that's a tricky balance, but I think it's important to try to walk that.
Yeah. No, I really like the way you're sharing this, and it resonates with me and some of my emotions and states at different times in different businesses that I've led. But it also, I'm sure, is resonating with a lot of team members out there that have seen leaders going through it. Because let's be honest, as leaders, we fall into this kind of paternalism trap, which is, well, we're leading the business. We're responsible for making sure it's healthy and that the team's comfortable and we're not putting people at risk. But everyone kind of sees us and
yeah.
And they might not see all of us, but they'll look at a leader and be like, well, the leader over here is talking about spending more time, exercising and socializing, but I don't see them doing it. So there's an observed reality there that I think it seems like it's interesting to invite others into that more intentionally.
I struggled with that a lot. And again, I was a young founder, but, I think this is probably different now. Again, like I haven't, led a big organization in 3.5 years where I think that there's a little bit more, I don't know even the right terms, whether it's, balance or boundaries or whatever. But I guess what I struggled with is I didn't want people to feel like they had to work all the time. I thought that one of the reasons that we were where we were as an organization is because I had worked my ass off. And I also felt that there was an opportunity cost to, and this is what I feel like people aren't honest with all the time. I had this sense of, okay, if I work an extra hour or two or take this trip or have this meeting, it might be good for the organization. It might lead to a new opportunity.
Yeah.
And so every time I didn't do that, I was potentially closing a door. So you could have the conversation of like, oh, well, you have to rest more and like that will allow you to, perform better, which I get. And I think this also goes to like there's different seasons for, different leaders, right? And so I think as a startup leader, I had a certain amount of hustle that was probably necessary, where at this point it's a little bit more of a sustaining organization. But I do feel like people aren't necessarily real about the cost that we're talking about, but also what it takes to lead. And so some of this is just, yeah, how do you transition with authenticity and not with a fake, sort of a fake press release story, which goes to my transition in general, because I could sit here and be like, my transition was awesome. We planned it great. I transitioned 3.5 years ago. The CEO that that succeeded my tenure is still in place, and the organization's bigger, and I feel awesome about where the organization is. I could say that, and all that's true. I could also say that the transition was one of the hardest things that I've gone through, that it was very difficult for the board to do it, that it was very difficult for me to extend my tenure, it's been hard in the aftermath figuring out my role with your organization. That's the more real story, but I feel like sometimes people don't articulate all that.
No, and I think you're onto something there. People don't articulate it for whatever reason it is, whether it's ego or whether it's that they want to make sure that they get the next job or there's so many causes. But it's great to be talking about it as candidly as this, Scott. You touched on seasons there, and I think of season stages. Like you said, I was great for getting the business started, but that run and maintain maybe wasn't for me. But you also talked about life stages as far as, well, time to start a family. So have you seen with your cohorts, when you've got leaders transitioning, that it tends to be more because of one versus the other, more because of like the business has moved to a different state of needs versus I need something else in my life? Or is it always a mix?
I'd love to do more research on it. I mean, I think that it's something we hear both of those. And so I don't know if it's, you definitely hear the, you know, organizations at a place where, you know, it needs someone to sustain. And I'm, you know, always looking at different opportunities. You do hear a lot of, I want to start a family. I've just started a family. I want to put more time into things. And again, like I hesitate because I think you can do both things at the same time. But, you know, I also think that sometimes you got to make decisions on some of this. I think you hear folks, you know, I don't know. Again, this is like all this stuff. I wish there was more research because everything I'm saying is anecdotal. My sense is, especially in the social sector, like 20, 30 years ago, especially with bigger organizations, it was standard for people to stay 15, 20, 25 years. And then it became standard for people to stay like what I did, about a decade. And now it's becoming more, you know, for people to stay 5 years. I mean, you said the average CEO length was shorter than that. And I mean, a lot of what we hear is, you know, is some sense of, pride in what they've accomplished, but exhaustion and burnout. And I think that I actually struggle with that a little bit, because for me, there's this balance between, okay, if leaders are burned out, then how much are we destigmatizing transitions as something that is fine to do, versus how much are we trying to make leadership more sustainable? And I don't know the answer to that.
But
we haven't really dealt with making leadership more sustainable. And so everything I've said about like wanting to start family and all that, I sort of made the decision that the way that I was living my life was unsustainable. I worked with a coach that got me to realize this.
Yeah.
That like I could, you know, try to make a few changes, but those small changes weren't going to do it. And so that was my perception, but I also don't think that that's necessarily how everybody wants to lead.
But I think you're onto something there, Scott. And by no means worry about bringing data, because I'm 100% anecdotal. but when you think about it, that concept of leadership, we need to make leadership more sustainable, is very interesting, because businesses and teams, by their very nature, in the days that we now work in and live in, are remarkably rigid. Like we put so many systems, tools, and processes into how we do work that it is actually easier to leave the organization than to go through an individual transformation within an organization for so many people, whether they're a leader or a team member. And that's that's something that fascinates me about the role of good teams, because I think a good team, maybe leadership isn't just the role of the leader. In a good team, leadership is shared. And when Jenny or Bob or Scott or Dane or whoever it is comes in and says, hey guys, I'm getting married and I want to have kids, or hey guys, I just had this injury and it's changing the way I'm living my life, or my parents are sick, that the team can kind of rally around and say, well, how could we redesign work so that we still get Scott and Dane and Jenny and Bob's brilliance, but we don't have to lose them? I don't think a lot of teams or leaders are having many of those conversations at those moments.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how much of that, I feel like I probably glamorized this too much, but sort of had this, you know, sense of when we were growing and had a team of 10 to 15 folks and everybody was all in, that there was this shared sense of purpose where that conversation would be possible. And then we got bigger and everything became systematized and routinized in ways that, you know, and I think in many ways that's necessary because sort of organization becomes decoupled with personalities. And so that, I mean, I guess I'd ask to your question, like how much of that is designing organization around individuals versus around systems. I don't know. I do think that I remember just having this sense of, I miss the days of, you know, and you can't have this for forever, but I miss the days of, you know, we're all going to stay at the office late to work on this, you know, proposal. We're all going to be in this together, as opposed to like, things are going well enough right now. But I think that goes to your, like, you know, if everybody's in it, you can design that, but organizations and companies and entities get to a place where you're trying to make it less dependent on individuals while also recognizing the individual humanity that everybody brings to the table, which is just like a tricky thing to do.
It is tricky. And I think that's why I've got a massive bias for running teams of teams, and particularly small teams.
Yeah, interesting.
And probably why I don't work for a major, you know, Fortune 500 company that's massive, and like to stay more in the small to medium realm.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense to have, and I echo that. I've tried to be on very nimble teams sort of moving forward, because I do think that there's sort of a shared identity, a magic that can happen when everybody's trying to figure things out. Maybe even less ego, but you know, I mean, maybe less scale that you can have to some extent too. So trade-offs always.
Definitely. And so circling back to some of these exit curious leaders, when they're coming in and doing these 6 monthly workshops with you, how often is it that you see that leader have success in actually bringing in the new leader and running together for a period of time? Like, I don't see a lot of it, but it feels like from a lot of the stuff that we're talking about, if it was economical, it would make sense to have more of an extended handoff transition period.
Yeah. So I mean, I had with my successor a month where she was putting in 10 hours a week. And then right after that, I was a little bit more actively involved for a while. So that's something that we definitely talk about with folks. We get the general question of how successful are transitions after people go through your cohort. And it's tough because, and this sounds so cliche to say, but, you know, success just looks different to different people, right? And so I think that there's some organizations that, you know, sunset, and that's totally fine. There's some organizations we've seen that have multiple leaders come in. There's some organizations we've seen where you do have the overlap that you talked about. There's some organizations that go through a cohort where the board takes over the transition process, and there's a really ugly transition process on the other end too. I mean, we've seen everything, and so I don't really know what success is to that extent. I think one of the challenges with that overlap period is that you have to have, you know, one thing that we've seen and talked about is there's little that's more important than the honest relationship between a successor and a leader. And that's a very difficult thing to do. I actually don't think that I did it as well as I wish I could have, which is where you sit down and sort of say, okay, what do we want our relationship to look like? How can we be helpful to each other? How can we not step on each other's toes? How can we be honest with each other? And that's a difficult conversation to have because you're sort of always like wanting to make sure you're not stepping on their toes and you're not going, you know. And so the easier thing to do is to sort of play the polite game where it's like, oh, like I want to do whatever's helpful. Great, like you're being really helpful, but you're not actually talking through what you need. And so I think that gets in the way of maybe some of the, you know, the more productive, you know, relationships and conversations that can, you know, that can happen at the beginning. That's something that I've thought a lot about too as it pertains to success.
It's interesting. It brings me to a conversation I had with a good friend, Andre Martin, recently. He was also on the show. And he talks about ways of working. And he's like, well, we should be interviewing the job and we should be interviewing the candidate for like how the work gets done rather than what have they done in the past. Mm-hmm. If you bring those two leaders together for a handover period, it feels like there's value in hearing not only what the exiting leader's way of doing the job has been, but how has the incoming leader worked in the past? Like most leaders, let's be honest, we don't turn up and create a new way of operating once we land in a new job. We turn up in the new job, we learn what's there, and we apply our patterns of behavior to how we like to work. So that there may be something there in the exploration, data, trust building around, well, how do these two people work in their teams historically, and where might there be some really good areas for them to collaborate and to ideate and to be very honest and candid.
I love that. I mean, I think that one of the things that happens, that I've seen happen, that happened with me, is that oftentimes you have leaders that operate pretty differently, right? Which makes sense. You have a founder, or you have, you know, someone that's been in seat for a while, you have someone else come in. But because of that, I think that there's a way to have a little bit of a, okay, this is what I've done, this is what the new person, this is where, you know, you can bring fresh thinking and energy. I think sometimes there's probably a reluctance to engage too much on strategy because the new person wants to make it their own. And I feel like sometimes there's too much pressure to make it their own, if that makes sense.
That's fair.
Because it's a little bit of like, well, if you have someone new coming in, why wouldn't they do things differently? And I think that there's a distinction between how you lead and what you do. I mean, they're intertwined, but I think that they're somewhat different. Like leadership styles versus strategy. But I think having those honest conversations seem like that would have utility, as opposed to, because I think without having those honest conversations, even externally, like team members are forced to do a little bit of translating on their own. Of like, oh, it looks like the new CEO thinks like this or wants to do this, or we hated what the past CEO did, and so we're going to articulate that, but maybe the new CEO still wants to do that or something. I don't know. I feel like it's a lack of honesty in some of those conversations, as opposed to like, this is how the former person led and thought, and this is how I think. I think that there's a way to, you know, to be more forthright there.
There is. Actually, we had a lady, Maria Scarangella, on the podcast recently. She worked at Geico, so large organization. And she said every time she moved teams, she would bring the new leader in with the team and they would have a conversation about, hey, Joe, I know you're coming in to lead this team. You know, Billy and I have operated this way in the past and I've probably let Billy down this way and Billy's probably had some challenges dealing with how I want it this way. But it's a really like honest team-based conversation. And it takes a lot of trust. Like you need to have underlying trust, confidence, psychological safety to bring a team together and have that conversation with their incoming leader. But wouldn't it be awesome if more teams could do that?
Yeah, I love that. I mean, because I think that there's so many of like the unsaid truths that happen where it's like you're forced to sort of read between the lines of how people are operating or how have operated rather than being explicit about it. And I feel like I tried to do this a little bit in my transition, which is like, I knew that there were things that people appreciated about me. I tended to be authentic. I tried to listen to folks. I think that there were, on the same side of the, or the different side of the coin, things that frustrated, that I frustrated, you know, people with, just like they might have thought that I didn't make decisions as decisively as I should have, and like listen too much. Like it's I mean, every strength is a weakness on the other side, but like having that honest conversation of like, okay, this is what I did and how I led, because I tried to be an open book, and like I know that folks like this and didn't like this, and here's how the new person's coming and thinking. And I think that there's utility to that, because if not, it's a little bit more of the, yeah, it's almost like a hidden agenda where there's no reason to have a hidden agenda.
Yeah, and they're everywhere.
Yeah, where you're making people try to read between the lines. And I think that probably leads to a lot of unnecessary drama with transitions in terms of new
team. It's draining too.
Yeah.
Energy wise, it's very draining.
Yeah.
No, this has been neat. Well, this time's flown by, Scott. I've really enjoyed that opening construct of let's look at leadership transitions as an opportunity for transformation. I think it's so real. And I like the way that you're approaching it in the cohort basis, strategy, tactics, emotion. It makes a lot of sense. It's something that you're creating a safe space off to the side for these exit curious leaders to do, which is awesome. And I really appreciate just your candor in sharing sort of your story and what exhaustion looks like, and where some of the fear and energy can go in these moments. Because I think, to the point that we touched on, anecdotally, I believe we're going to see more transitions in this next 5 to 10 years. And as businesses and in communities, we're going to have to get better at doing it. So it's a movement that warrants a lot of research and attention and focus.
I appreciate it. No, I've really enjoyed the conversation. And yeah, I mean, I think we focus specifically on transitions through the work that we're doing, but I think that there's, I mean, and this has been illuminated in this conversation, broader team and organizational dynamics that I think the way that I think about it is, the best leaders, and this is a little bit counterintuitive, but the best leaders are looking to make themselves dispensable. And if that's how you lead and that's how you operate, then that's not something that just happens during a transition, but something that is happening as you're building up a team and organization throughout.
Yeah. No, that's it. And I bet you that is a call to action that a lot of leaders will like to hear, but also a lot of team members would like their leaders to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you make sure that ego doesn't get in the way too much too?
That's it. Well, Scott, if any of our listeners are operating in your social sphere or just generally interested in what you're doing with the leadership transition community, what's the best way for them to find you?
So the Leadership Transition Community's website is theltc.org. So theltc.org, or folks can reach out to me at swarren@jhu.edu.
Cool. Well, I appreciate it. I've really enjoyed the conversation, Scott, and look forward to staying in touch. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Dan. This is great. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time.